Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today's show was originally aired in July of 2015, but is still highly relevant today, so here it is. If you're one of the increasingly shrinking number of people who still believe the official account of 9/11, which, by the way, is a conspiracy theory, this show today may cause some cognitive dissonance for you. I'm going to focus on the alleged 19 Middle Eastern men with box cutters, the alleged hijackers of the four planes. If you do experience some cognitive dissonance, you know, it's okay, and sometimes experiencing and working through this cognitive dissonance, although a challenge, can be a really eye-opening and life-changing experience. Or you could retreat at the first sign of it and not learn anything new. You'll have peace of mind, but will you have the truth? You won't have to grapple with cognitive dissonance if you retreat from it, that cognitive dissonance that can turn everything you thought you knew on its head. So I'm going to explore the evidence, or lack of it, concerning the 19 alleged hijackers. One of the reasons that I was motivated to look at the alleged hijackers again are the efforts by former Senator Bob Graham and other congressmen to release the 28 redacted pages of the Joint Congressional Inquiry that took place in 2002. Although it's supposedly classified, we're told that it contains information about the Saudi connections to the alleged hijackers, their funding and support. And while I think Americans have a right to know what's in those 28 pages, the Saudi connection to the alleged hijackers is only a minor detail in the whole 9/11 scheme and could be used to distract people from the real perpetrators of 9/11. And why is all of this important? Because the world you live in today, the post-9/11 era, as it's called, with its endless wars, loss of civil liberties, almost total surveillance of you and everything you say or do, increased corporate power, loss of democracy, government propaganda and outright lies, a corrupt court system, a corrupt banking system, an almost useless Congress that does the bidding of the corporate world, the privatization of and loss of accountability of the intelligence and military operations, secret trade deals, etc., have all been justified by 9/11 or forced on you by the increased government power over you, which has been justified by 9/11. That's why 9/11 is so important. Reveal it for what it really is, and that's the beginning of the end for the evil cabal that's leading us down the road to destruction. The 9/11 official account falls apart almost immediately if you just start to look below the surface of what you've been told, and I encourage you to do that. In any area of 9/11, the towers, the Pentagon, Shanksville, and the alleged hijackers, their story falls apart. All you need to do is look at it, and it's out there. It's abundantly out there. So let's take a look at the alleged hijackers today. And again, if you believe the official account, get ready for some cognitive dissonance. So here are some simple facts to get us started. On September 12, 2001, FBI Director Robert Mueller said, quote, "We have, in the last 24 hours, taken the passenger manifests and used them in an evidentiary manner and have successfully, I believe, identified many of the hijackers on each of the four flights that went down," unquote. He acknowledged that the list of named hijackers might not contain their real names. Not one of the accused hijackers' names appeared on the passenger lists made available by American or United Airlines. Mueller acknowledged in the days after the attacks that the identities of the hijackers were in doubt. However, these same names are used in the final report of the 9/11 Commission. FBI Director Robert Mueller twice was forced to admit on CNN that there is, quote, "no legal proof to prove the identities of the suicidal hijackers," unquote. On April 19, 2002, at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, Mueller said, quote, "In our investigation, we have not uncovered a single piece of paper, either here in the U.S. or in the treasure trove of information that has turned up in Afghanistan and elsewhere, that mention any suspect of the September 11th plot." Mueller claimed that some of these suspected hijackers and their accomplices had ties to several terrorist groups, but he declined to provide details. FBI Director Mueller has admitted that his case against the 19 FBI-named hijackers would never stand up in a court of law, but the FBI has refused to alter its list. 1 month after the FBI began to investigate the alleged hijackers, President Bush called off their investigation on the pretext that manpower was needed to fight the anthrax threat. The FBI never returned to complete it. So they want us to believe that the FBI, after 9/11, didn't have enough manpower to investigate both the alleged hijackers and the anthrax attacks at the same time? The first FBI list of hijackers was released on September 14th, and then a new list was released on September 27th. On the original list for Flight 11, with five alleged hijackers, all five of them were said to be still alive. And so on the second FBI list, only Mohammed Atta's name remained, and the other four were replaced with new names. But three of these new alleged hijackers also turned out to be alive. But the FBI stuck with this second list anyway, and it became the final list. On September 12th, the first list of the alleged hijackers reported by CNN included the names of Adnan Bukhari and supposedly his brother Amir Bukhari. However, Amir was dead. It seems that he died on September 11th, 2000, an entire year prior to the 9/11 event. And Adnan Bukhari showed up at an FBI office saying, well, I wasn't one of them, here I am. And they were supposedly on Flight 11. Four of the five hijackers on Flight 11 have turned up alive. Several reportedly headed home just before September 11th after living in the United States for various periods of time. James Hopkins, an FAA employee, searched the FAA database for the name Adnan Bukhari and found that he was Saudi and had trained in aviation security for the FAA in Oklahoma. Hopkins was reprimanded and actually fired for his investigation into Bukhari's history. Hopkins took legal action and had his job reinstated, and Adnan Bukhari was cleared of any wrongdoing by the FBI. Also on this second and final list, Hani Hanjer was no longer listed as a pilot. Hani Hanjer at first was the pilot supposedly of Flight 77 that hit the Pentagon, but when it turned out that he had really poor flying skills and could never have done that maneuver, they apparently changed all that and said he was no longer the pilot. Think about it. This is the shaky information we used to attack and kill millions of people in Afghanistan and Iraq. And here are just a few more facts about the alleged hijackers. In addition to Hani Hanjer on Flight 77, Khalid Al-Midyar is reportedly also still alive. The UK Guardian reported that his identity is the subject of much confusion. It's believed that he was using several aliases, and American investigators are, quote, not even certain that his name is really Khalid Al-Midyar. According to Saudi news, he was confused with young Saudi computer programmer Khalid Al-Midhamadi, who was shocked to see his picture among the suspects. And on September 19th, the FDIC, or the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, distributed an official document clearly stating that Al-Midhar was alive and warned banks to watch for him. Also allegedly on Flight 77 and reportedly alive after 9/11 is Salem Al-Hazmi. And the Saudi embassy in Washington, D.C. confirmed that he is alive and works at a petrochemical plant in Yanbu, Saudi Arabia. His father said that FBI photos bared no resemblance to him and produced his own to prove it. On United Flight 93, that allegedly crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, Two of the alleged hijackers are reportedly still alive after 9/11. One of them is Saeed Al-Ghamdi. The FBI said he may have lived in Delray Beach, Florida, but the Saudi embassy revealed that he was still alive and working for Tunis Air. The UK Daily Telegraph reported on September 23, 2001, that when Saeed Al-Ghamdi realized that he was one of the suspects, he said, quote, "I was completely shocked. For the past 10 months, I have been based in Tunis with 22 other pilots learning to fly an Airbus 320. The FBI provided no evidence of my involvement in the attacks," unquote. Ahmed Al-Nami, also allegedly on Flight 93, was reported alive also after 9/11. Under a ruling issued October 11, 2001, by a Somerset County judge, everyone who died aboard United Flight 93, except the terrorists, will get death certificates. At the insistence of the FBI, the terrorists won't be getting them because investigators aren't sure of their identity. Two of the five alleged hijackers on United Flight 175 that hit the World Trade Center Tower Number 2 were also reportedly still alive after 9/11. They are Marwan al-Shehi and Mohad al-Sheri. So our endless war on terror is based on this less than reliable evidence, or lack of evidence. There's no real evidence that the alleged hijackers were ever on the four flights on 9/11. And now I'm going to share with you an audio clip from an RT America interview with author David Ray Griffin concerning the alleged hijackers. And this was posted on YouTube on March 9th, 2010. And here it is.
The 9/11 hijackers are alive and well. That's according to the chief of Japan's Democratic Party, who says 9/11 is a hoax. Dr. David Ray Griffin is a professor and author who wrote the book, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited. He joins us from Santa Barbara, California. So I'm guessing that you think that, and this is just an assumption on my part, that maybe this parliamentarian from Japan may have a point in determining whether 9/11 was really a hoax or not?
Oh, absolutely. The physical evidence is so strong for the destruction of the World Trade Center by explosives that we're really in the level of proof now, not conjecture. So on that score, I've just written a book on World Trade Center 7. It's called The Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7, Why the Official Story, the Final Official Account of 9/11, is Unscientific and False. And I, in that book, give a massive amount of evidence that's been compiled by scientists, architects, and engineers that all three buildings, although in that book I focus on World Trade Center 7, were brought down by explosives. There's simply no other possibility. And the only way that NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which wrote the official report, the only way they were able to deny that was to commit massive scientific fraud, which in simple words simply means they lied, they lied, and they lied.
Dr. Griffin, the politician who I'm talking about in Japan, his name is Yukihisa Fujita, and his claims are that 8 of the 19 hijackers are still alive and well, that this was all created by not necessarily terrorists, but people who are trying to benefit off the stock market. How much of this argument are you buying from Mr. Fujita? Or do you believe that it is kind of an inside job, but for other reasons?
Well, first of all, we have to be careful about this Washington Post editorial. Fujita himself says that they really distorted what he said, so we can't take that too seriously. But that said, certainly let's take the issue of the hijackers, whether there were eight or so. We certainly know that some were still alive after 9/11. Walid al-Shehri, for example, showed up in Morocco and gave a press conference. The BBC reported on it. And they said there's no doubt about the fact that he is the man, because they had published, FBI had sent his picture around the world, and it was the same man. And then there's his brother. And yet when the 9/11 Commission wrote its account, they said that Walid and Wael al-Shehri were the ones probably on Flight 11 who stabbed the flight attendant. So they just ignored the fact that these two guys were still alive.
Dr. Griffin, real quickly, then the question becomes to you, why? Why would the government kind of cover this up, hide all this information?
Well, what we have here is an extreme example of something that imperialistic governments have done for a very long time. They're called false flag operations. You attack your own people. You blame another country or another group that you already had reasons to want to attack. Hitler did this when he was ready to attack Poland. That's how World War II got started. Japan did it when they were ready to attack Manchuria. That's how the Asian part of World War II got started. Our government did it in this case, planting evidence that these attacks were carried out by members of Al-Qaeda. But it's interesting that even our FBI says they do not list Osama bin Laden as wanted for 9/11. Now, our news media generally won't tell the people that, but it's the fact. And when one of our people asked the FBI, why don't you list Osama bin Laden as wanted for 9/11? The fellow who was the head of investigative publicity said, because we have no hard evidence that Osama bin Laden was responsible for 9/11.
And now you'll hear an audio clip from a section of the film Loose Change. It starts with Alex Jones speaking.
Heard them say that a paper passport fell out of one of the towers and was picked up by a police officer on the street. This plane flies into the building, explodes with jet fuel out of the guy's jacket, goes through the fireball, through the side of the plane, out of the burning building, out of the fire shooting out, and comes down to the ground unscathed. But something happened. For 6 months, they reported they had this passport. Boy, we've got it. We've got the proof. And then the guy stood up and was alive in the Middle East, and they pulled it and said, oh, that was a mistake. He wasn't a hijacker, and the story just disappeared.
So what about the hijackers? It's the funniest thing, but at least 9 of them are still alive. Waleed Al-Sheri is a Saudi Airlines pilot in Casablanca, Morocco. Whale M. Al-Sheri is alive and well. Abdulaziz Al-Amari is a Saudi Airlines pilot living in Saudi Arabia. Mohand Al-Sheri is alive in Saudi Arabia. Khalid Al-Madar is a computer programmer in Mecca. Salam Al-Hamzi works at a chemical plant in Yanbu, Saudi Arabia. Saeed Al-Ghamdi is training to be a pilot in Tunis. Ahmed Al-Nami is an administrative supervisor for Saudi Airlines. And last but not least, Mohammed Atta's father claimed to receive a phone call from his son on September 12th. 14 of the hijackers based their training in Florida, and the 5 that allegedly hijacked Flight 77 lived in a motel right outside the gates of the NSA. Not to mention, the official autopsy report for Flight 77 does not list the hijackers. And the opening paragraph makes no mention of their absence. After these discrepancies were pointed out, FBI Director Robert Mueller brushed it off, saying that the hijackers were using stolen passports and may not have had tickets, so there's no way to know who they actually were. So, if there's no proof that the hijackers were members of Al-Qaeda, or if they were even on the plane in the first place, what justification do we have for bombing Afghanistan?
And now here's author James Fetzer giving 10 reasons to doubt what we've been told about the alleged hijackers.
Essentially, everything the government has told us about 9/11 is false. My top 10 reasons for thinking they are fake. Number 10 top reason for thinking the hijackers are fake. Their names do not appear on any passenger manifest. That's not easy to arrange, my friends. If you know of any other case, I'd be interested in hearing it. Number 9, none of them were subject to any autopsy. Would have been interesting, powerful evidence if, in fact, we had some bodies here to offer some proof, but there is none. Number 8, top 10 reason for thinking these hijackers are fake. 5 to 7, at least, have turned up alive and well and living in the Middle East. They've even been interviewed by the BBC and The Guardian in the UK. Now, I dare say that if they were actually killed in the impact of these airliners, then it's even more difficult to imagine how they could have arranged those interviews.
Yeah.
Reason number 7, the FBI nevertheless has not revised its list. This is quite surprising. They have to be aware. David Ray Griffin's second book on 9/11, the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, makes this point as his number one item. They have to know, yet they have not revised their list. As an aside, I expect we're going to see some backtracking and equivocating now, and they're going to be saying, well, maybe they aren't really sure about all the names on their list. But listen to this. Reason number 6. A special agent of the FBI by the name of Flagg, F-L-A-G-G, has explained that the FBI knew almost immediately the names of all 19 hijackers because they discovered a piece of luggage left by Mohammed Atta when he had driven up to Portland, Oregon, and then turned around and rushed down to Logan just in time to participate in the hijacking of a plane from that airport. According to Flagg, this piece of luggage Atta left behind included not only a terrorist manual, but a very convenient list of the 19 hijackers. And I say, well, that's really quite stunning considering 5, 6, or 7 of these guys have turned up alive and well. How can you explain that? Reason number 5. My top 10, number 5 reason for thinking these hijackers were fake. They could not have flown the planes. Nihalis Agadavan, among others, who's a pilot and aeronautical engineer, has studied their training background, and it's simply preposterous to presume these guys who could barely get a Cessna off the ground could have piloted a commercial airliner and brought it to its target. It's preposterous. Top 10 reason number 4. Those cell phone calls that we've heard so much about could not have been made at the altitudes and speeds these planes were flying. A.K. Dudney, a professor of computer science from Western Ontario, has taken cell phones of different makes and models on different flights around the country and discovered at altitudes above 2,000 feet and speeds above 230 miles an hour that cell phone connections become fewer and farther between. They would have been impossible. And that, of course, would include the one you've all heard about from alleged passenger Mark Bingham, where he calls his mother and says, "Mom, this is Mark Bingham." You believe me, don't you? Top 10 reason number 3. During the trial of the alleged 20th hijacker, Zacharias Massawi, a tape recording was played, allegedly from Flight 93, which included the passengers discussing how they were going to attempt to break down the cabin door using a drink cart. One astute student of the case wrote me to point out that this was ostensibly a cockpit voice recording, and that cockpit voice recorders do not record voices in the passenger compartment. Top 10 reason number 2 why these hijackers appear to be fake. The last words attributed on that tape to the hijackers who were facing imminent death was Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar, which is Arabic for God is great, God is great. According to a Muslim member of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, the last words that a devout follower of Islam should say when confronting imminent death is not those words, but rather, in Arabic, there is but one God, Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. I therefore suggest that the writers assigned to this script simply didn't know enough to get it right. Number 1, top 10 reason number 1 for believing these hijackers were fake. Zacharias Massawi, this April, was subjected to a trial to determine whether he should be punished by life imprisonment or even death for not coming forward to reveal the plot, which the government maintained, had he done, would have enabled the government to have intervened and saved lives. I make 3 observations. A year before, April last, Zacharias Massawi confessed to a different plot. He had acknowledged that he had been involved in a plot to fly a plane into the White House in order to extort release of a sheikh who had been imprisoned for terrorist activities in 1993. He denied he had anything to do with 9/11. That is the crime to which he confessed. A year later, the federal government has played a shell game, and now they're insinuating and implying he had something to do with 9/11. As my good friend Webster Tarpley has observed, this man had no obligation to come forward and to confess his involvement in a plot. Even if he had been involved in 9/11, we still have something here known as the Fifth Amendment. He had no obligation to incriminate himself. Third, and most tellingly, and this must have been incredibly embarrassing to the government, an FBI agent testified he'd been following Massaoui. He'd been observing him taking this flight training. He had suspected that he might be involved in a terrorist plot, even to fly planes into the trade towers, though he suggested later that was merely a lucky guess. He testified under oath that he had told his superiors about his suspicions, not once, not twice, 70 times. And I say to you, five or six might be excused as ordinary incompetence. 20 or 25 may be criminal neglect. 70 times has to have been a matter of direct policy, deliberate policy. They were keeping these guys in reserve so they could use them as their cover story when the government itself perpetrated these dastardly terrorist acts.
There's a lot more about the alleged hijackers that we haven't touched upon today, such as the fact that several of them had been trained at U.S. military bases. Or we haven't mentioned Mohammed Atta's visit to Jack Abramoff's boat 2 weeks prior to 9/11. And we haven't mentioned his involvement in drug running in Florida. And we haven't mentioned Jeb Bush's involvement with the FBI confiscation of Venice police and Venice flight school records on September 12, 2001. Or the Amalgam Virgo drill that was held by the U.S. military on 9/11 that doubled or mimicked the 9/11 attacks, or the Able Danger program. Stay tuned to hear more about these on a future broadcast. Some of the sources for the information on today's show come from several books. One of them is The Hidden History of 9/11, edited by Paul Zaremka. There's a really great chapter in there by Jay Kolar called What We Now Know About the Alleged 9/11 Hijackers. Another really good book is called Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida by Daniel Hopsicker. And also the book Hijacking America's Mind on 9/11, Counterfeiting Evidence by Elias Davidson. And The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, 9/11, The Cover-Up and the Exposé, by David Ray Griffin. And again, the show you were just listening to originally aired in July of 2015. On May 20th through the 22nd, 2016, I was in New York City at the Left Forum as part of a group that organized 6 deep state panels. I'll be sharing many of the presentations from these panels on future broadcasts. And our next progressive movie night will be on Wednesday, June 29th. So tune in next week for more information about that. 9/11 Wake Up Call airs on WWUH Radio 91.3 FM on Wednesdays at noon and again at 8 p.m. and on WESU 88.1 FM on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. and at several other radio stations and blogs. And the shows are archived at radioforall.net, and that's the digit 4, so radioforall.net. Once on the site, click on Contributor, and then Cheryl with a C, and the show should pop up in chronological order. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.
Power to the people!